You know you want to be there. A pile of pastors, a mountain of musicians, a boatload of laity, all passionate about worship, gathered together on the beautiful campus of Concordia University, Nebraska, this coming July, the 28th through the 31st. Comfort, comfort ye my people, preaching, praying, and singing the comfort of Christ to the troubled conscience and the broken heart. John Kleinick, Paul Solek, Betsy Werner, Brian Wolfmiller, Robin Lever, and the Stash himself, President Matthew Harrison. Oh yeah, and two other guys named Wilkin and Whedon, along with a whole pile of your favorite Issues Etc. guests. Did I mention that the registration cost starts at just $175? Or that full-time students, including seminarians and deaconess students, pay just $25 registration? Yeah, seriously. I told you, you want to be there. For more information, click the link, Comfort Comfort, on the Issues Etc. homepage, issuesetc.org.
One yard, 1 foot for the same sex to get married, and they're taking wrong and making it right, and taking right, making it wrong.
Those of us who are inspired by Judeo-Christian values, we're not seeking to sit in judgment of anyone. But we know that there are fundamental truths proven through thousands of years of human history.
I refer to Joel Osteen's theology of the tyranny of positive thinking, where everybody must say positive things and think positive thoughts in order to be blessed by God.
That's the difference between preaching about Christ, where you basically just cut him apart and use him however you see fit, versus preaching Christ.
Pro Football Hall of Fame wives, love Issues, etc.
We're all familiar with the, and it seems like they have had a bit of a resurgence in the last 25 years or so, the claims of paganism, old and new, to be the real origin of the holidays that even Christians will celebrate. Even Christians buy into this sometimes. Well, Christmas is really a pagan holiday. They're playing into the hands of the claims of paganism, old and new. Easter, it's a pagan holiday. Or maybe we'll get another one in their Advent or Lent, their pagan origins to those seasons. The Nativity of John the Baptist, most Christians, well, I shouldn't say most Christians, most Protestant Christians in the United States don't even know that's on the calendar, wouldn't know where to put it on the calendar. It is, by the way, today. It claims from paganism, old and new, to be the origin of the celebration of the birth of John the Baptist, or at least to have some connection to it? Yes, indeed. But how do we respond to that? How did the church historically, on its own, without the aid of paganism, decide to celebrate the Nativity of John the Baptist on the 24th of June? We're going to answer that question and more here in the second hour of Issues Etc. Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're coming to you live this Tuesday afternoon, the 24th of June. Pastor Joseph Abrahamson will join us here for the first, 45 minutes or so. We'll be answering questions related to claims of the pagan origins of the Nativity of John the Baptist. Then Terry Mattingly of GetReligion.org will be our guest. We'll talk about media coverage of the shortage of priests in the Roman Catholic Church. You can join us through the next hour, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Send us an email right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org, or a tweet at @issuesetc. Pastor Joseph Abrahamson is a regular guest. He is pastor of four Lutheran congregations in northwestern Minnesota called Clearwater Lutheran Parish, and he has authored a three-part series for Steadfast Lutherans titled Redeeming Holy Days from Pagan Lies, Nativity of John. Joseph, welcome back.
It's good to be back. Thanks for the invitation.
Before we get into the pagan claims and how to respond to them, how historically did the church set a date for the observation of John the Baptist's nativity?
Originally, the writings of Clement of Alexandria and the Stromata and Hippolytus of Rome in his Chronicon, everything hinges upon the date of Passover. So using the Old Testament as a guide for the first growing of the grain and the first full moon after that, that's when Passover was originally established. And the idea that they present is that this was also the first month of creation, and since Jesus Christ is the Creator, he came into the world then at that time. Now, in part, it's directly tied to the Easter celebration, but during the first great Easter controversy, the Christmas cycle and the Easter cycle were separated by church decision, so that the festival of Easter would always fall on a Sunday rather than on the 14th of Nisan.
So to summarize that, the church basically set its clock by the date observed of Christ's birth?
Yes. Yeah, and his conception was thought to be on March 25th, and then 9 months later would be December 25th. And then since John was conceived 6 months before Jesus, according to the Gospel of Luke in the first chapter, then John's nativity is celebrated 6 months before Christ's nativity.
And that
puts it at June 24th, yeah.
We put it June 25th. Can we explain the discrepancy there?
Yeah, the Romans dated from the calends, which would be the beginning of the month, and they would say 8 days before the calends of January, that would put December 25th for the birth of Christ, and 8 days before the calends of July is June 24th, because June only has 30 days instead of 31.
How ancient are we talking about the establishment of these related dates, the birth of Jesus, the birth of John the Baptist as forerunner?
St. Clement of Alexandria wrote his Stromata somewhere between 193 and 215 AD. And Hippolytus of Rome wrote probably 234, 235 AD is when he wrote his Chronicon, and before that for his commentary on Daniel, where he does the same thing with the dates.
Are they establishing something in those writings, or are they saying this is how it has been observed from antiquity? In other words, are they saying this is how Christians have observed it for some time now?
Both of them are laying claim to the tradition that was already established. Now, it has to be said that there are other dates that some people had set for them, too, for the births of Jesus and John. But these seem to be pretty widespread, because you have Clement in Alexandria in northern Egypt, and then you also have Hippolytus over in Rome. So it's a fairly widespread date that's established there.
It's one thing to set a date on the calendar. It's another for the church to observe it. How long does the observation of St. John's Day, so to speak, go back?
The origins of that day, we have both with St. Clement. We have also with Gregory the Wonder Worker, Gregory Thaumaturgus, in Turkey about 270 A.D., and as far as having sermons on it, we have in the 3rd century and 4th century, we have sermons on St. John's Day.
So how far back, and it's interesting to note in your research, that the association of St. John's Day with the simple kind of calendar event, astronomical event, really, of the summer solstice, you'll need to explain what that is. Actually, Christians were the first ones to say, hey, isn't that nice that these coincide? What's the solstice, and who was first noting the coincidence of the solstice in St. John's Day?
Yeah, the solstice is the longest day of summer, the longest day of the year. It's the solstitia, meaning standing still on its own for the sun. And the earliest sermon that I could find that tied together the solstice and the date of John's nativity, it comes from Augustine. So that was a June 24th sermon that he gave. Not really sure of which particular year it was, but it's also in his, it's mentioned about that date in the chronography of 354 as well.
But what Augustine is doing there, I take it, is simply noting coincidence, not saying we celebrate St. John's Day because of the solstice.
No, right, exactly. The quote that I have is that John is born today, from this day the days diminish. Christ is born on 8th of the calends of January, that's December 25th, and from that day the days continue to grow. John was diminished through his suffering by the loss of his head. Christ was exalted through his suffering on the tree. And it ties together with John's expression in the gospel that I must diminish and he must increase when he's speaking about the Christ.
Speak in general, if you would, about how paganism, both old and modern, has attempted to co-opt the Christian holidays through things like the lunar calendar, how they these coincidences between Christian and lunar or solar cycles. How would you describe it?
The modern is a little bit easier for people to get a handle on, I think, because all you really need to do is go back to the end of the 1800s in the Romantic period of literature, and you can see the poets starting to write poems about Pan and the horned god and such. And in those poets, in the Romantic literature, they start to attribute to these characters different features that they wished that they could have in Christianity. And the holidays at that time started to become co-opted really by the writers like Yeats and Keats and such. As far as the ancients co-opting Christian practices and such, Irenaeus writes in his Against Heresies that there were different groups that would borrow Christian symbolism, like the Mithraeus would imitate the Lord's Supper, and quite a few of the different authors in the of the Apostolic Fathers and later wrote very, very vocally against both Christians adopting pagan traditions and pointing out when pagans were adopting Christian traditions.
One thing that you note that is I find just fascinating, that is, for example, Augustine, there in the 4th century, he has no problem whatsoever, you say, in condemning pagan holidays, in basically saying, look, we no longer practice or observe these things. But he does not preach, when he finds the coincidence between St. John's Day and the summer solstice, he doesn't preach against the observation of the solstice. Why is that significant?
Well, that's significant because since Augustine and Origen and all of these others were so vocal in all of their writings in trying to bring Christians out of their old pagan practices, that you would expect that if there were a pagan practice associated with these things, that they would write against it. I mean, that's what they normally do. And in this case, when we have a modern claim that this is a pagan origin, we find no evidence of it in this way at all in these writers.
So in other words, what we have here is the man on the with his boots on the ground, the contemporaries, yeah, to these pagan holidays associated,
and a former celebrant of pagan holidays too in his case,
simply sees only coincidence between the two things, does not say, oh, by the way, we've borrowed this and baptized it, stop doing the pagan thing.
Right, exactly. And like I said, he really did not have problems in condemning all these different pagan practices that he had come out of as well, pointing the finger to his own practice. And so when we don't find that kind of condemnation here, one really has to wonder if the claims that moderns are making about it really are true.
When we come back, let's talk a little bit about the borrowed and baptized. Often the arguments against Christian holy days come from, well, within Christianity nowadays, from a rabid anti-Roman Catholicism that assumes if it's Roman Catholic, it must have some sort of pagan origin. We'll deal with that with Pastor Joseph Abrahamson right after this.
In Higher Things, we believe that if you put good Christ crucified for you Lutheranism into a youth, you'll get a good Christ crucified for you Lutheran youth. Join us this July at the Higher Things Crucified Youth Conferences in Florida, Wisconsin, Utah. Check us out at www.higherthings.org. Higherthings.org. Dare your youth to be Lutherans this summer.
Steadfast Lutherans, people who believe that traditional Lutheran preaching, liturgy, and hymnody continue to deliver Christ crucified for sinners today. The Reformation attempted to return the Church's focus on what we do for God back to a focus on what God does for us, that Christ died for our sins in accordance with the Scriptures. Some things never change. The gospel is still under attack from inside and outside the Church. To see how Lutheran doctrine and practice preserve the gospel, visit steadfastlutherans.org.
Solid. Serious. Substantive. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
At Redeemer Lutheran Church in Fort Wayne, we are mostly looked down upon by cool people. They're always telling us that we take ourselves too seriously. That, apparently, is the uncoolest thing on the planet. We are theological nerds. We get more incensed by bad exegesis than a group of comic book fans who find out the hero was just dreaming. Some people want us to calm down, but we aren't going to. Redeemer, Fort Wayne, haven for theological nerds.
No matter the size, big or small, RP Lumber can deliver it all. From pickups to one-tons to box trucks and booms. Everywhere you look, you see blue. RP Blue. RP prides itself in customer service. RP will deliver quality products to your home, business, or job site. And you can be sure of timely delivery on clean trucks with courteous drivers. So when you think of service, think blue. RP Blue. With over 50 local community locations, for 37 years, RP Lumber.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the claims of pagan origins regarding the Nativity of John the Baptist that the church celebrates on this day, June the 24th. Pastor Joseph Abrahamson is our guest. He's pastor of four Lutheran congregations in northwestern Minnesota called Clearwater Lutheran Parish. And he's authored a three-part extensive study for Steadfast Lutherans titled Redeeming Holy Days from Pagan Lies, Nativity of John. You'll find a link to it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Joseph, let's talk about how often these arguments for pagan origins arise from what you call rabid anti-Roman Catholicism within Protestantism. How would you describe it?
Well, The big issue in England was that the Protestants didn't like anything that the Roman Catholics had done, and they were trying to separate themselves. They had formed their own a confession that was basically against the medieval church rather than against the particular doctrines that the Roman Catholic Church had that were rejected in the Lutheran Reformation. And in this, today people will, say, oh, my neighbor's Baptist or my neighbor's Catholic or my neighbor's Lutheran, and they'll use stereotypes to say, this is what Catholics are, this is what Lutherans are, this is what others are. They actually had fights that caused people to die in England because of these differences. They waged war against each other for these reasons. People were put into prison. So when the Reformed took over England, and when I say take over, it was illegal to be Catholic. These people that had grown up with these long-standing medieval church traditions were in danger of being persecuted, put in prison, and even executed if they practiced them. So they practiced them in secret. And then the Reformed would write papers and books, many, many voluminous books, about how all of these different practices from the Middle Ages were actually of pagan origin. And most of the stuff is just whole cloth fabrication.
So they're making it up.
Pretty much, yeah. When you get to the 1800s, there's a man named Alexander Hyslop, who was later called Bishop Hyslop in a Presbyterian covenantal church. And he wrote The Two Babylons, which he tried to trace all of the different ritual things of the Roman Catholic Church back to Babylonian origins. And now, the interesting thing about that is Babylon was just being uncovered archaeologically at the time, and nobody could read cuneiform. And so when he's writing these things also, this is pretty much a whole cloth fabrication. Of course, there were other people that had written similar things and guessed about what history would be. But Hyslop's whole purpose was to try to discredit the medieval practices of the church.
So
he
so
was picked up by the Millerites, and the Millerites, from them we have the Church of God and the Jehovah's Witnesses and a variety of other groups that came out of that group that hold on to the same thing.
So we're talking about essentially anti-Roman Catholic propaganda. It's kind of a rewriting of history to allege pagan origins for that. But I take it that through kind of the passage of time and the dimming of memory, Christians in the 21st century pick this stuff up and think that they're reading real history.
They do, yeah. And in fact, Hyslop's book is still very popular. The Jehovah's Witnesses only recently stopped making reference to it, but they used to make direct reference to it all the time. The teachings are still there from Hyslop's book. Even the Baha'i come from the Millerites on this particular tact. And the assumption seems to be that if God didn't specifically command that you do something, it is a sin for you to do it in the worship life. And that comes out of the Westminster Catechism also.
All right. We spoke earlier about, as you call it, the second battlefront for the alleging of pagan or neo-pagan origins, or actually pagan origins, for Christian practice. And that second battlefront is the neo-paganism that began, well, let's say, turn of the last century to kind of formalize itself. What specific claims were made by neo-paganism with respect to the nativity of John the Baptist?
The specific claims are numerous, but probably the main issue is that there was a widespread pagan celebration throughout not just Europe and not just England, but throughout the whole world in ancient times on the date of the summer solstice. Now, knowing geography, that makes it a little bit problematic because in the tropic zone, it's not quite as significant a thing, and in the southern hemisphere, it's the opposite time of the year, so it can't quite be totally universal throughout the world just on that assumption. But the actual evidence, when you look back to try to see what the claims are, just does not bear this out. When you look at the calendars, you look at whatever writings are available.
Talk about, like, let's just go back to early Roman times,
okay.
The time of the empire. How were, both in the time of the Republic and then later under the Caesars, how were the Romans celebrating? They were celebrating a solstice. Virtually everyone who observed it did celebrate it in some form. What were they doing?
Well, there were sun worshippers, As far as the things that we call the solstice and celebrating it, it was used to fix the beginning of the year for some time. But Julius Caesar changed that when he introduced his calendar. The solstice was fixed on June 25th in the Julian calendar. But there are, you know, we have a lot of writings from the Romans, but the closest that I could find to talk about particular celebrations for the solstice on June 24th, 25th, one was from Ovid's Fasti, his calendar book, and there's not mention any big celebrate. In fact, it's Fors Fortuna's celebration, not Sol's celebration, that's mentioned there, Sol being the sun god. You have a temple of the sun that's found in the Circus Maximus, but no specific rituals associated with the summer solstice. Aurelian, in AD 270 to 275 or so, tried to reintroduce the worship of Sol Invictus. Now, this is already after Christmas had been set, already after St. John's Day had been set. But he was basically killed for doing that by his own people shortly after he did that. So this, you know, he was trying to take over the date away from the Christians.
What about among the ancient Greeks? What, as far as we can tell, what were their ways of observing the summer solstice?
Yeah, the ancient Greeks, each city had its own calendar, basically. Sometimes cities would coordinate and such, but the big claim that's made today by groups like the History Channel and such is that the festival of Cronia, the festival of Kronos, was the beginning of the year and that it took place on what we would call June 25th. However, looking at many of those different calendars that have survived, that festival doesn't really fall on what we would call June 25th. It usually falls into July. And another interesting aspect of this kind of fast and loose history that's being done is that Kronos is also the festival that's used to try to say it's the background for Christmas itself, that it occurred late in December. It's one of those issues where when you try to find out what the people are claiming about history, they really are taking a few phrases here and there out of context and just making a kind of a collage and calling it their own.
You can't have it both ways. I mean, you cannot say the solstice was borrowed by Christians for John the Baptist, and the solstice was, or the date of Kronos was borrowed by Christians for both John the Baptist and for Christmas. I mean, can't wear both hats, can it?
Well, yeah, if you're consistent, you can't. But, you know, these are different authors. They're not working together to try to form a consistent thing. The only real consistency is to try to discredit Christianity on this.
Other observations in the ancient world, how would you describe them?
Well, if you want to go really ancient and say that it's pre-Christian, pagan, universal thing. One of the great things you can do is go to the libraries of the Sumerians and the Akkadians. And while there is a one main calendar that does have a date of significance for the solstice, it wasn't very widespread. And the ceremony involved the priestesses going from one temple to the other, from the temple of the sun to the temple of the moon on those days. And as far as being able to establish whether or not the people had anything to do with this and the people were worshiping, well, we can't tell, because even that much we had to piece together to try to figure it out. So we don't have a direct heritage from ancient pagans and ancient pagan times to that can be demonstrated in any way that this is a source for the celebration of St. John's Day.
Another twist on this is the assertion of Celtic origins to this day. What's the basic claim? What are the problems with the claim?
The basic claim is that the Celts, and right there you have the problem, and because who are the Celts? We know that we have documents from the Romans and some Greek documents that mention the Celts, and we had Julius Caesar fighting against the Gauls, which are considered the Celts. But the term Celt wasn't used to specify a group of people that called themselves the Celts. It was used in a way that described several different peoples that were opposed to the Roman Empire. So we don't have a unified people, per se. Then when we look at the things that people today claim are Celtic, like Stonehenge and Avebury and all of these different monumental structures, these actually predate what we would call Celtic by 1,000 years. So there's no direct connection. And even those monumental structures, when you look at all of the different monumental structures, there's only a handful of them that actually have any kind of orientation toward the solstice, winter or summer. The rest of them don't. And so the question then is, well, if we've only got a couple of them that actually do, could we really say that it's a universal practice? The answer there is probably not.
We've been told. I mean, it has been repeated ad nauseum by History Channel, biography, you name it, whatever other popularization of this pseudo-history, that these ancient peoples who built these monuments, these prehistoric monuments, were obsessed with solstices and equinoxes and things like that. You're saying that if you actually look at all the evidence, you don't see that preoccupation?
Well, Stonehenge, if the heel stone was placed correctly, then it probably does relate to the summer solstice. But that doesn't say that this is what the people were doing as far as their worship. All that says is that there's this alignment, and probably it was intentional. It tells us nothing about their culture, tells us nothing about their religious ritual or practice, or what section of the people were actually involved in it. There simply is no written text to describe what was in their hearts and minds.
Is there some bleeding over of midsummer pagan celebrations into the Christian observations here and there throughout? Are we asserting that there was never any overlap of midsummer pagan celebrations with Christian observations?
Yeah, I wouldn't say there wasn't any. I would say right now, for the things that we have, there isn't enough documentation to demonstrate that they are previously pagan practices. And probably the two biggest and most widespread are the bonfire and the wheel of fire that's rolled down the hill on Midsummer's Day. Now, when we say Midsummer's Day, too, I mean, the listeners should be aware that the 25th was Midsummer, and it was only changed because the calendar got off over the years, and the Gregorian reforms to the calendar fixed Midsummer's Day to the 21st instead of to the 25th. So these two days are actually related historically. But the earliest documentation about fires actually comes from already Christianized areas, and the documentation about the earliest wheels used on Midsummer's Day also comes from Christian areas, and the wheel wasn't originally set on fire as far as we can see. But even today, you know, people will build up bonfires. I don't know if you saw the articles in the news the last couple of days about this being the biggest celebration at Stonehenge ever. Some 33,000 people were there awaiting the sunrise on Midsummer's Day. Very interesting times.
I'd hate to tell them that they've wasted money on a very expensive plane ticket and bus ride out there based upon almost zero evidence. How would you summarize all this with about a minute? Any connection between ancient pagan holidays or observations and the nativity of St. John the Baptist with about a minute?
Well, some of the main purposes of these claims is to try to undermine Christian holidays and say, look, you know, the Christian church is really a fake. They don't have any of their real holidays. They had to take everything they had from the pagans. Now, that assertion, there is syncretism that's happened in the church, in the Old Testament, in the New Testament, and later on in the church history. There's no doubt that Christians have caved into pagan practices. But these particular assertions about the holidays actually don't bear up under historical scrutiny when you actually look into the sources and try to find out where things came from.
Pastor Joseph Abraham, his son, is pastor of four Lutheran congregations in northwestern Minnesota called Clearwater Lutheran Parish. He's author of a three-part series for Steadfast Lutherans titled Redeeming Holy Days from Pagan Lies, Nativity of John. You can read it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Joseph, thank you very much for your hard work, your research, and your time.
Thank you very much.
When we come back, we're going to spend some time with Terry Mattingly of GetReligion.org and author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate. We're going to talk about media coverage of the shortage of Roman Catholic priests, especially in America. Is it more than one story? We'll be right back.
Hymnody is important, very important. It's an invaluable tool that helps teach and confess the faith. Singing hymns is something we all do together on a weekly basis, yet some congregations find it difficult to sing confidently without the support of an instrument. If you are one of these congregations that can't find an organist, Church Music Solutions can help. Our substitute organist service allows your hymns and liturgy to be played on your instrument to help inspire and support your congregation's song. Keep singing with Church Music Solutions.
Christ at the Center, The Justification of the Ungodly, A Contemporary View of Faith and Reason, The Holy Spirit in Christ. These are just some of the almost 30 essays included in Propter Christum, Christ at the Center. It's a new book of essays in honor of Issues Etc. regular guest, Pastor Daniel Preuss. Find out more and purchase Propter Christum at shop.logia.org. Propter Christum, Christ at the Center, shop.logia.org.
Do you wish your Lutheran school offered Latin, Greek, or logic? What about German or calculus? Right now, local Lutheran schools in two different states are utilizing Wittenberg Academy to expand their course offerings. Whether it's Latin for third graders or logic for seniors in high school, Wittenberg Academy can help. For your homeschooler or for your brick-and-mortar Lutheran school, we have solutions. To find out more, visit wittenbergacademy.org.
Hey, St. Louis, how would you like to achieve your fitness goals in a fun and supportive atmosphere? Hi, this is Kevin Reisick, owner and operator of Arch Fitness of East Alton, Illinois. We offer adult boot camps throughout the week. These camps include cardiovascular conditioning, muscular strength and endurance training, balance and coordination activities, and more. For more information, give me a call at 618-670-6952, Arch Fitness of East Alton, Illinois, 618-670-6952.
Essential exercise for the Christian mind. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. St. Mark Lutheran, Edmond, Oklahoma. Emmanuel Lutheran, Manchester, New Hampshire. University Lutheran Chapel, Minneapolis, Minnesota. Prince of Peace Lutheran, Freedom, Pennsylvania. Holy Cross Lutheran, O'Fallon, Missouri. St. Paul Lutheran, Indianapolis, Indiana. Christ Lutheran, Rochester, Minnesota, Holy Cross Lutheran, Carlisle, Iowa, St. Peter's Lutheran, Indianapolis, Indiana, and Grace Lutheran, Wellsville, Missouri. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. Issuesetc.org. Click support. The Issues Etc. 300.